Welcome to the Spirit Aligned Leadership Program, Legacy Leader Interviews. Today we are featuring Lenora Naranjo Morse from Santa Clara Pueblo from a September 2020 interview with our program director, Gail Small.
Okay, so Pivawana, good morning. I am Gail Small. I am the program director of the Spirit Aligned Leadership Program. And today we're very delighted to have with us an amazing legacy leader from the Santa Clara Pueblo. And I'd like her to introduce herself. Welcome. Welcome, Nora.
Thank you, Tamo. Thank you, Tamo. Navit o hawai huapoginamo. Hebo Navi Americana hawai Nora Naranjo Morse.
Omo.
Hera hichompone o ain, yeah. Oare o hio. I'm from Santa Clara Pueblo. I said my Tewa name was like the spinach flower. My English name is Nora Naranjo Morse.
It sounds like you said a lot more than that, Nora.
Yeah, well, I was welcoming people and saying good morning to them.
Yeah, we'd like you to talk about how your corn planting and harvesting relate to the future of young women.
It's been an interesting process to go through the planting and the harvesting, and now we're getting ready to do a lot of the processing. There are two fields I'm going to be talking about today. One is a field just outside of my house, and you may have remembered it as when you and Julie came. And the other field is below the Hapo village, which is about 2 miles away from here. It is a more community-oriented area where people from our community go and have been for many, many years planting primarily corn, although now many people are doing also other vegetables, and it's been quite an important place historically, as well as, you know, during contemporary times, because with this COVID, a lot of people have started returning back to the community fields, which has been really exciting, because you walk down there and people, it's a very active area. And when you are asking, what is this process of planting and harvesting doing for young women? I think what it's doing is it's reconnecting them back to the earth. And in that process of taking the time to go down to the fields, because you have to make that separation of the TV in your home, the computer in your home. You leave that and you go out of your house into nature. And then you start getting reconnected to the land and the momentum of the land. You start becoming very aware of water. That's why I sent those images of the irrigated water, because you start realizing, especially in northern New Mexico, how precious water is. And so all of these elements that were life-sustaining resources for our people are coming back. And the fact that young women are getting involved in this, and I can speak for my family, that's why I sent you pictures of these young women standing around the adobe oven getting ready to roast. I can see them becoming more engaged with this agrarian lifestyle, and also this idea of, okay, we have 15 bushels of corn. What do we do with it? And so then we go back to these cultural teachings of roasting corn and drying it or blanching it and then freezing it. And so I think all of those skills are very important, because they may seem outdated in terms of it's easy to go to Walmart and buy a bag of frozen corn. But if you have your own corn that you've made from a tiny little seed and watched it grow and irrigated it, there's a really deep-seated connection to where you come from. You're rooted to that place. And I can see that in these young women who have chosen that process of wanting to help out their elders, wanting to become connected to the land, and having that really very rich experience of growing food for them, not only them, but their family. And what's happening is that this year was a really bumper crop. And so we have so much kale, carrots, corn, and potatoes that we're sharing it with other people in our community. You know, we're giving it away. And I think that those things are really valuable for the young women, because I don't know where our future is going as human beings on this planet. How do we help one another? How do we become self-sufficient? And our cultural value systems really offer us a great opportunity to be sustainable again.
So what is the young girl's role, or the women's role, in the corn planting and the harvesting?
Well, traditionally, everybody in the spring would move, you know, to where the place was that they were going to start growing. They'd have like these summer camps up in the canyon. I remember that, my mother telling me that. Some people would even sleep down in the fields to safeguard the fields, but everybody participated. Little kids, everybody participated. And I think that was really a very communal effort. And because of that communal effort, people really had a very deep relationship because they depended on one another. I think that sense of communal togetherness and work was really very key to the Pueblo worldview and other tribes, because I think a long time ago we needed each other.
There was like no specific role like for the women or the young girls and in the planting ceremony or harvesting, huh?
Well, I think there were different roles. Like in some of the Pueblos, the women who were younger and about to become, have their periods, would be isolated into rooms, and they would grind the corn. And of course, those kinds of things are not really happening anymore to a great degree, but that's why it's so, I think, important to introduce these processing, how you process food, or how you take care of food, or how you take care of the elders by giving them the food that you've grown, become even more important.
Was that kind of like a puberty ceremony?
Yes, it was a puberty ceremony. And I think they would do it for 4 days. And they would just grind corn, and they would be left to, I guess, isolate and just, you know, work the corn. I guess they're called like matates, or the grinding plate. And they would be on their knees in ceremonial clothing. And that became part of their experience of becoming a woman.
Were you able to do that in your growing up years?
No, because I lived up in Taos. A lot of my formative years were up in Taos, and that's where I saw the younger women there. I couldn't participate in that because I wasn't from that community. My parents were working up in Taos, so I got to be a part of that cultural experience in that I observed it. But no, in Santa Clara, that did not happen. I don't think that happened to most of my sisters.
So the puberty ceremonies have faded out prior to your generation, huh?
Yeah, in some ways they have lessened. And I think the idea of it getting initiated is very, very sacred and very secretive. Because I think when the Spaniards came around the late 1500s, they came in and they, in fact, went into the kivas where all the ceremonies were happening, and they basically destroyed the interior kivas and chased the people away from their own ceremonial place. And so what the people did is in Santa Clara is that they went down into the fields. So the fields also have that historical aspect to them. And that was the place that that became their sacred gathering that was secret. And I think because of that, a lot of the ceremonies became the start of being, we became more colonized. We then became less attached to a particular way of life that honored that seasonal growing and connection to the earth and all the value systems that our culture originally had. And I think through that colonization process, we became less concerned about that in some ways. I think a lot of people now, the more traditional Pueblo people, you know, they hang on to those things and they still hold it very sacred. And during our ceremonies, that's still an important emphasis.
What do you think has replaced that, like, dignified role, special role of the young woman going into puberty, like you say, changing of life, becoming a woman, and being dressed and grinding the sacred corn as part of her coming of age ceremony? Is there anything that has replaced that in the tribe to give that young girl her sense of identity and beauty and uniqueness?
I think when we do the harvest dance in the summer, in the late summer, I think that really gives a lot of the younger women a sense of who they are. And I think it's really a beautiful time for them because they are asked by the people in the elders in the Kiva to really think about themselves as spiritual vessels. And they're asked sometimes to abstain from alcohol or other things, late night partying or things like that. They're asked to really think about their sense of self and what it means to stand behind in a line of other dancers and hear the sound of the drum and the music and lift their feet up at the very same time all the other dancers are. And I think they are lifting up their feet, as they are told, for everyone. They are becoming blessed beings. They are bringing the rain. They are bringing the good things in life, not just for themselves, but for everyone. And I think that's a real core thing for Pueblo people, especially from my experience, is that we are so connected to this idea of community, surviving through that. And I think these dances, these harvest dances in the fall, really are about, you know, honoring the corn, but also they're about honoring yourself and your relationship to all of these things, like the water, like the land, like the people that you live next to, or that you're, you know, that you commune with on a daily basis.
We met your daughter, Eliza, and she's a school teacher in the community there, elementary teacher and art teacher. Was this the first time that you were able to share with her the planting and harvesting ceremony that you've been involved with together this summer?
Well, she has been actively gardening and planting for some time now. I have been continually helping through the process of getting the food and trying to either freeze it or dry it. So that's sort of where I shine. She is especially interested in the aspect of growing. And so when, like I said, because she had so much corn in her garden, we spent one whole weekend gathering the corn, cutting it up from the cob, and then blanching it and freezing it. And that's a modern way of processing it, but there was so much corn, we had to figure out as many ways as we could. Then we started talking about traditional ways of processing and drying the food. So then we, of course, our minds went to how the women long time ago used to dry and bake it in the oven and then dry it like I showed you in those pictures. And so one thing led to another. All my sisters got on board because they are eager to have those memories, to share those memories again with younger women. So my oldest sister, who's getting close to 90, and I sent you a picture of her. She offered her bante, that's Tewa word for an adobe oven. We went there very early in the morning and we gathered the corn. We had soaked it the night before. And then we built a fire in the pante, and then we put many ears of corn in there overnight. The next day we opened it up, and what closing it up in the pante does is it sort of steams it and gives this really rich taste to it. And when we were pulling the corn up, I remember looking at my daughter and thinking, she is so happy. You know, and I could see that on her. She didn't have to say it. I could see it on her, her sense of pride. She was real proud of what she had done. And the women around her were lifting her up to show her, by showing her this traditional way of preserving food. And it was really wonderful because at one point, my oldest sister, who is now kind of the matriarch, she came out and she was inspecting the way we tied the corn and making comments. And of course, that added to my other sisters who were doing it their way. There was this give and take on how people do their corn, or how you should braid it and how it should be done. And that kind of exchange is really important because it shows these younger women that everyone has their own take. How there was a great big discussion the night before. How hot should we get the pante? So that it has to be just perfect so that the corn doesn't burn, the corn just steams. And so there were all of these negotiations that we had to navigate. And I think that was also very important for my daughter to see. And it wasn't just my daughter who was there. I had a niece there who lives in Acoma most of the time. I had my other niece who is very interested in that idea of learning how to process crops and helping out. And the wonderful thing about this is after we braided all the corn and we hung it up, everybody stood back against the wall, adobe wall, and the sun was coming up and everybody had their coffee. And there was really a sense of real communal satisfaction. Everybody then separated the corn for their families. And before we left, because we are workers, we baked bread in that same oven. It was like we made 20 loaves of bread before we left. So it's like there was this real need for all of us to get together and make this food and really celebrate in the harvest in that way. Through our exchange, through that negotiation of how hot the pante should be, but also just getting to be with one another and supporting. And like I sat with my nieces, and of course I wanted to know about their life and how they're doing. And I think it's important for young women to have that attention. Because in the outside world, everything is based on either how you look or how other almost superficial gauges. This is a different way of relating to one another. You have your 90-year-old auntie sitting there next to you just
maybe she won't say much, but she has her shoulder against your shoulder, and she's loving you. She'll pat you on the knee, and then you feel a sense of caring. And I think no words sometimes are even exchanged, but this just that closeness is real important for these young women.
Thank you, Nora. Do you see like the circle continuing, say, after your generation passes on with your daughter and like your nieces that were there, are they going to continue the sisterhood circle and closeness and doing the corn?
I would imagine so, because it's at this point, like I said, you know, it's much easier to go to Walmart and buy a bag of frozen corn. But what I noticed is that these younger nieces were really anxious to be together. And they're learning these skills that I think the importance of these skills are not lost on them. And I think just as importantly, it gives them a reason to come together, to be a family, to be a community. And I think as the world gets more and more uncertain and we are faced with all of these challenges, I think that's going to become something that these young women really need to have in their lives. I see that, like the other night, we started looking at how many carrots were produced. And if you want me to, I can send you a picture. My four-year-old granddaughter was carrying this big bunch of carrots. She has to figure out how she's going to deal with that. If she comes and lives here at some point once I'm gone, if she comes to live here, then her auntie Eliza will then show her how to not only farm, but Eliza will have under her belt of skills these things that she can show her niece. And so hopefully those things will continue and that they will be that source of pride and connection. I want our young women to know the possibilities in themselves, because there are some smart women in our communities. And they're just looking all over the place for these for people like us, of the elders, to give them, you know, to give them that pat on the knee and say, yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good.
You know, Nora, I know you're a potter, right? And you do, yeah. You do adobe. You built your own adobe place. What do you call it? Your center?
Oh, Nabihuage.
Would you describe that to us?
The studio, the process of it?
I just want you to talk about what the concept of that is. And I want you to talk a little bit about, like, you built your own fireplace there. Did you build this oven, for example, in this place? Or, you know, what's the significance there of building from your sacred soil?
For me especially, that is especially a mark of who I am. Because I learned these skills of building fireplaces, of laying adobe from my dad. And he was a builder. And sometimes he would just pull me out of school so that I could go and help him build a fireplace. Those moments are just imprinted in who I am. And so it's not a stretch to think, oh, I do not want to live in a HUD home. I want to live in a home that is built from the ground up. And so when I made that decision, I was totally naive to the amount of work and effort that it takes. It's extremely hard work. Each adobe filled with sand, mud, and straw weigh between 20 and 30 pounds. And they're about 11 inches long by about 6 inches wide and about 3 inches deep. and it's heavy. It's solid. So these homes are very solid. They're well insulated and they make great homes. They also are very efficient outdoor ovens, which the Pueblo people up and down the Rio Grande have used for many, many generations. When I decided to build my studio, I was needing a place to put everything that I had learned, everything that I was becoming as a contemporary Native person into this one space where I could be who I was and who I was becoming. I knew that. It started off very slowly because by the time I was building this studio, my most recent studio, I was already like in my 50s. And I had already helped build our house. And really, building is for young people. And I came upon the conclusion that by the time you're 50 and you're a woman, building, lifting up adobes above your head is pretty challenging. So I enlisted help. It took me about 2.5 years with the help of people, of different people. But I got it done, the basic structure. When I started making it, I said to myself, oh, this is the place that I would like to die in, because this so much gets brought in here from the outside world and from my inside is all emptied into this space. And so that's why I was calling it Navihuage, because Navihuage means my center place, the place of me, of my maybe my soul or who I am. And I think when I was naming it, I was reminded of all of my years bringing all of that into this space. That was almost, I consider, a sacred space. That's why I named it that. I don't know if it will, when I'm gone, I'm hoping that my daughter Eliza will understand that this place then will become other people's place as well, like her place or my granddaughter's place, because they'll be looking for their own center place. How do they connect to all of these stories or all of these cultural, this cultural knowledge? How do they make it their own huage, their own place? And hopefully they will find that space sacred. And maybe not just them, but other young women who occasionally come in who are looking for, like, again, I'll go to my sister, maybe just sitting there at the fireplace and having a conversation and feeling safe and feeling like someone is there to listen to them and thinking, oh, if this old lady built this huage for herself, then I could build one too for myself. Because I can see that in Eliza. She sees the things that I have attempted to do with what knowledge I've been given. And she, you know, that's why she's farming. That's why she's learning how to process the food in different ways. That's why she's learning how to braid the husks so that she can hang them up to dry. Those seemingly simple things are important, not only that she has these skills, but that she has this confidence. And I think now, especially for young women, they need to be assured of that is theirs for them. That can be theirs as well. And I think Navihuage gave me that space, gave me so much that I would hope young women can find that space for themselves as well. Whether it's that internal space or that they can build, it'll prompt them to build a space where they call it a studio or their sacred space where they can become.
I love the story of Nabi Wagai. I just had to circle back around to that because I've been there. I feel the heart and the place. And like your sister, you and I sat by the fireplace. You had it going, a fireplace you built with your own hands. And I sat there getting warm and I was looking around. I could just feel so much, you know, strength and love there. Can you just talk about how you recycle, reuse in your art? Where did that come from?
I went to go gather clay at this traditional clay spot here on tribal land. This particular spot had been used for, I remember going there as a young girl, and went there by myself one day, and I was gathering clay, and I stopped to take a break, and I walked over this hill, and below me, I could see this river of trash, and it's our community dump. And at first, it was jarring because the visual juxtaposition of trash and clay that is so sacred didn't make sense. It didn't jive. And I didn't know how to understand it. After I gathered all my clay, I went to the dump and I started walking around and thinking, well, is this another resource that I could use? And I was making a statement as well because I wanted to get this material and deconstruct it in some ways and reconstruct it so that I was making something totally different from it. And in some ways, I can thank my ancestors because they were always doing that. Down south, they were taking, in the 40s, the Pueblo people were taking like those old 45 records and making jewelry from it, you know, and the jewelry was beautiful. I'm being inspired by the way these, my ancestors are looking at the world, how you see something and not just disregard it as trash, but an element of a resource. And I think that was really important for me because once I took all this trash from the dump, I brought it back to my studio and I basically spent a year cleaning it and looking at plastic and wire and all of these things. And again, I was deconstructing not just the material, but my sense of materialism and consuming and discarding at this careless rate. And then once I cleaned the material, I started thinking, oh, how do I make something out of this so that it's saying something? It has context and weight, artistic weight, but it's also reminding me that we have been so colonized that we forget we have the ability to deconstruct all those paradigms that have really burdened us and held us back. And we have all the potential in the world. And I'm speaking to young women now. We have all the potential in the world to take this material, to take this cultural knowledge, clean it up, reconstruct it into what we want it to be from our own huage, from Nabi huage, from Ubi huage, Nambi huage, that we are learning from all of these sources to become who we are and that it's everywhere around us, even in my case at the dump. Yeah.